Blog Talk Radio.
I am your host, Rain Star. Desperate House Witches is not a GPG or even an R-rated show. So, if bad language, bodily functions, dirty talk of any kind may offend you, this may not be the show for you. But I think it is. So why don't you stick around and find out. Desperate House Witches is brought to you by the one, the only, the incredibly wicked one, the amazing Dorothy Morrison. Please check out www.wickedwitchstudios.com for all of your witching needs. And check out her book, Utterly Wicked, one of the best hexing books ever written. Again, that's www.wickedwitchstudios.com. Well, guys, I hope the weather isn't killing you where you are. But this afternoon, my guest is the incredible Storm Fairy Wolf. Hey, Storm.
Hey, how's it going?
How are you? It's good. How are you doing? How are you feeling? What's your weather doing? Are you drowning? Are you burning? I mean, it's got to be insane.
Well, I live in California, so we're probably going to burst into flames like any minute. That's just kind of our MO these days for summertime. But so far, so good.
Oh, my gosh.
We've had some heat waves.
Yeah.
It's not been a big deal. I was telling you earlier, I have solar panels, so that means I've been blasting my AC and feeling very decadent the whole time. So
nice.
I'm counting my blessings.
That's wonderful. Now, where you live, did you have those solar panels installed?
Yeah, I want to say like a year and a half ago, we finally got them installed.
Uh-huh.
And oh, my goodness, that is such a difference. I don't even want to go into
really?
Like what my electricity bill was before. It was crazy. It was like, it was insane. And, you know, I mean, like one month we had like $1,000 PG&E bill. And I'm like,
wow.
What? You know, I used to live in one bedroom apartments, right? And so I'd pay like
right.
$20, $25, and then it went to $1,000 because we moved, you know, what, 18 years ago, we moved into this house.
Right.
And, you know, become homeowners, you know, and all of that. Now that we've lived here 18 years, I'm like, oh, yeah, things are starting to need to be replaced now. And, oh, yeah, if I was renting,
wow.
I would just say, yeah, I need a new fridge. You know?
Right.
But now it's like I have
yeah.
to tell myself I need a new fridge.
I know. You know, and the reason I ask is because, you know, I've been hearing about solar for years. Obviously, we all have. But I rarely find someone who has actually been able to successfully transition into solar, and it's really nice to know. I rent, so yeah, I make the phone. When something goes wrong, I'm like, shit's broken, come fucking fix it, you know, because, hey,
right.
That's
totally,
me. but yeah, no, it's nice to know that solar really does save, and it's really worth it, and that's just fantastic. So thank you for doing something to doing your part to save the world, because I think solar is important.
That and my pocketbook.
It.
It's win-win, right? Because it's like help save the world, but also help save a few dollars, and that's always nice. And what's extra nice
yeah.
is we have a battery for the house. So if there's a brownout
nice.
Or something, we have like key things in the house that will stay on, like the fridge, you know, things so
mm-hmm.
you know the food won't go bad. So that totally feels like decadent luxury to me. You know, we always compare our lives now to how it was when we grew up, right? And I had all these markers
uh-huh.
of success. You know, when I was a little kid, one of my markers of success
right.
was I'm going to live in a two-story house. Because, of course, we lived in a little tiny, you know, one-story house, you know, when
sure.
I was growing up. So, of course, a two-story house, oh, well, that's success, right? And so
That's high living.
So those are some things that I've been able to do. Yeah, totally right. It's like, and other
yeah.
people be like, whatever, that's whatever. But that was my childhood idea of a successful life means you have stairs.
Oh my God!
I did not also realize that you have stairs and you have an upstairs, then that means that the upstairs is like way hotter than the downstairs. You know, because little kid brain didn't consider PG&E.
Yep.
So now we have to augment that with solar panels. But so far we're doing okay.
No, but it's amazing at perception and how it changes, not just from a child to an adult, but from, you know, someone first discovering what path they want to be on as far as like a pagan or alternate religion path. And, you know, these steps that we go through to consider what is and what isn't success. You know, like I used to dream of doing what I'm doing right now with you, of talking to somebody who's, you know, very well established and who's a great writer and, you know, an artist and a shop owner. And, you know, you've done all these things. And my ambition was to not be you, but to be the person who actually gets to talk to you, which is what's happening. So I guess you're helping me fulfill my dream every time you come on.
Well, and the feeling is neutral, right? Because one of my ideas also of like, what I didn't use the phrase career, you know, when I was a kid, but I first saw Lori Cabot as a public witch,
mm-hmm.
and she was running for the mayor of Salem, and that struck something in me, and I was like, that's what I want to do. And you know, I read, you know, books by witches, and I thought that's what I want to do. Especially when I read The Spiral Dance by Starhawk, there was something in there that really resonated with me. And I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to teach witchcraft. I want to write books on witchcraft. I want to travel around the world teaching witchcraft. I want to own a witch shop. And so in all of those things, I will say I'm very blessed. I've been able to do all of those things. And, you know, and now I need to add some more goals, you know, to that list, which is great. Again, I'm counting my blessings every day.
Absolutely. And you have to, I think, because I think gratitude begets more gratitude. But, you know, the things we imagine and the way they come about and the difficulty involved in achieving them, that's not always connected in the brain when you first have this idea of this is what I want to do. It's like, it's great that that's what you want to do, but then you have to meet people who want to help you do it. And, you know, it's a fascinating trip, and it sometimes goes through things that you wouldn't have expected or anticipated. Everything does not go from A to B and you're there. You know, it's for me, it's been a really long, winding, circular, snaking, crazy journey.
That's life.
I know, right? And I'm here before I'm dead, so I'm kind of glad about that, too. It kind of makes it fun.
Right, but exactly. And I think it's important to,
you know.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think it's important to look at those and to recognize, hey, I've really achieved these things, you know, that I want. Not in the sense of like, oh, look how great I am, you know, but in a sense of just gratitude, you know, like, and also acknowledging that, you know, not everyone is so fortunate. You know, not everybody is able to achieve, you know, even a handful of their dreams, you know. And so if we can achieve even just one of them, you know, we should really hold on to that and recognize how blessed we are. I'm totally that guy.
Absolutely.
I will often say I'm not a Pollyanna. You know, I'm not definitely like, everything is positive because sometimes things suck, you know. But I do look for the silver lining. Even when things suck, I'm like, well, what can I learn? You know, from this, because ultimately I want it all to be just be stepping stones toward my goals, you know, and, but then you have to stop along the way and kind of smell the roses and enjoy it while you can, because, you know, I just turned 50 a couple months ago. And so it's, you know, now that adds a whole other layer of like your time management, I suppose, you know, like, wow, I've been doing this for a while. And then I think theoretically, well, how much longer do I possibly have, you know, just in terms of life expectancy and all that. So I those kind of morbid thoughts, right? You know, I'm like, oh, how much longer am I going to be in corporeal form? And I still have so many things to do. But also stop for a minute and appreciate what you've done and what you have, because that's what makes life worth living.
I totally agree. And as the person who is almost 10 years older than you, that's even more so. Because, you know, when if somebody passes in their 50s, it's like, oh, they were so young. When people start getting into their 60s, it's like, eh, she had a good life. You know what I mean? It's a little
bit
different.
Yeah, no, I do. I do hear you. Even though, I mean, obviously it's like, well, I want to be 100. You know,
sure.
That would be great, you know. Ultimately, like, upload my consciousness into the mainframe, you know, whatever, I'm down, you know, whatever, what comes next, you know, but yeah, people will pass away, like, in their 60s, but you know what, it's, obviously, there's, nothing is guaranteed, you know, I often think about my old friend, Eddie Gutierrez, you know, and that was really shocking when he died. I want to say he was 37, and, you know, a couple of years younger than I was at the time. And it really, that was a wake up call. That was shocking, you know, cause I had never really known anybody who was my age or younger. I was never really close to somebody who had died. You know, the people who had died in my life had been grandparents, you know, and then you're prepared for that, you know, whatever their advanced age, you know, maybe there's a sickness, you know, whatever. But with Eddie, it was very sudden and unexpected. And he was so young. And it really does kind of just tell you, like, hey, you know, don't take anything for granted. There is something about, like, live every moment as if it's going to be your last. You know, not, like, obviously in terms of terror, you know, but in terms of, like, what can I get out of this moment? What enjoyment can I just get out of this moment? Or what fulfilling thing can I do for someone else? You know, because that's something, too, that for me has really come up more. I mean, it's always been kind of like a guiding principle in my life. Like, what can we do for others? I was always very much raised with that as a value, that really it was all about service. And I think that's really ultimately what led me to a priesthood. And, of course, you know, my witchcraft practice, you know, is a priesthood. Sure. And I feel that a big part of that is service. You know, and then I think about you know, the old school stories of the witches, you know, who, not the coven witches, you know, that came later, you know, but the idea of the solitary witch living in the hut at the edge of the village or, you know, whatever, the cunning man, the wise woman, and they were in service, you know, people would go to them for help, you know, and they weren't in servitude, you know, they weren't slaves, they weren't just, you know, giving their stuff away, you know, you'd pay them. You know, whatever. And so, but they were there also to help, to provide a service, you know? And so that's something that I've always taken very seriously. And so if I ever get in that space where I'm like, oh, woe is me, focusing on the negative stuff, you know, whatever, I try to remind myself that, oh, that's a good opportunity to kind of change my energy by doing something to give back to other people. You know, it's the whole idea. If you feel like you need kindness, then what you really need to do is to practice giving kindness to others, you know?
Absolutely.
And so that's a little something I try to remember. Like, what can I do to, like, you know, give back or to help somebody else or, you know, whatever. So, and that also brings me into that space of counting my blessings.
Absolutely. And I think it's really important to do that. And I think somebody once told me ingratitude was the greatest of sins, even though I don't necessarily believe in sins in that regard, but I totally get it. I mean, the universe will show you what your ingratitude will get you, and it will be happy to show you sooner than later. And I've always tried to remember that. Well, I mean, I've seen people be really, and I understand it to a certain degree. You have to take care of yourself first. I mean, I get that. But there are people who take care of themselves, and that's the primary goal as opposed to doing service. Because I was kind of, when I was coming up and being mentored, it was, I had to do a large number of years of service to get my first initiation. So, for me, it's very much based in service, and I completely appreciate and get it. But I'm seeing now, you know, we were talking before we went on the air, and it just seems like there is this really big wave of anger and negativity right now that I was wanting to address with you, because I know you to be very clear-headed about such things, and, you know, it's something that I had wondered if you had been seeing too, and what was maybe causing it, and you know, is this something we're just going to have to ride out, or are there things going on in the universe that I'm not aware of that are making people so angry? What's happening?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I'm kind of in that boat with you, too, right? I don't exactly know. I think there's many different factors, but I think we've all been seeing a steady rise of anger and indignation, you know, playing itself out
yeah.
on primarily social media, because, of course, that's mm-hmm. how we're all connected, especially now, you know, after a lengthy lockdown and stuff. You know, the
yeah.
main connection that most of us have is through the Internet. But,
sure.
you know, I think politics, American politics in particular, has really kind of harmed our collective psyche, you know, in
mm-hmm.
such a way that we're so ready to just jump and attack instead of trying really to listen. And I'm,
yeah.
you know, I know you said, oh, I'm level-headed or whatever. I try to be. I certainly have not always been. And I can't guarantee
right.
that I always will be, you know, because I
sure.
can fly off the handle with the best of them. I have an Aries rising. You know, that's just what happens.
Yeah.
I did a little poll,
yeah.
I don't know, several months ago on Twitter. I did a little poll asking which of my three big signs, you know, do you associate me with? And I didn't tell what was what, you know, but almost everybody picked
uh-huh.
Aries. And I was like,
yeah.
wow, I really thought that I came across as my Pisces self. And then my friend Durgadas said,
uh-huh.
yeah, but not on Twitter. On Twitter, you come across as an Aries because I'd be posting all this political stuff. And I had that righteous indignation. And there's probably times I went too far. I said snarky things to people, although I will never apologize for saying rude, snarky things to the orange Julius Caesar. But
right.
I made it part of my spiritual practice, actually, to troll him when he was on Twitter.
Oh,
and,
good.
I didn't do it every day, but it was cathartic.
Right.
It made me feel better. And
sure.
I thought, you know what? That's enough. That's enough, right? Excuse me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like there's not, with our current psyche, our collective psyche, there really isn't the drive toward understanding. There's really just the drive towards yelling and trying to catch people, call them out. And it's very
yeah.
tricky because I think that everything deserves nuance, right? Because I think there definitely are times where we want to call people out, you know? And,
yeah.
you know, sometimes people
yeah.
do really horrible things. You know, I see really horrible things, you know, sometimes on the Internet. And I will report tweets, you know, if I think things are promoting violence. You know, I've seen,
sure.
you know, men, especially white men, you know, cis white men, you know,
mm-hmm.
attacking women,
yeah.
Threatening people of color, you know, and I will report that stuff. And sometimes, you know, I'll point it out, you know, whatever. But sometimes
yeah.
what happens now as I hopefully, I got my fingers crossed, hopefully getting wiser, you know, as I get older, one of my practices now is I'll write something out. I'll write out like a really hot tweet, you know, whatever, full of my
yep.
anger, and then I'll delete it.
Yeah.
And I won't even send it.
I do too.
And that
yeah,
has felt so good now. Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah.
That feels so
I
good.
I love
now,
it.
Every once in a while I'll still send it because I'll think about it and like,
uh-huh.
does this need to be sent? Maybe I'll save the draft, you know, whatever, and then
right.
Maybe send that tomorrow or whatever. But I used to just be like, what? I'm having a reaction and you have to read my reaction. And then at some
right.
point I realized this is like
tweet.
Also my – exactly. And then it just hit me. I was like, that's just my ego. You know, that's just
uh-huh.
me. I want to feel better. I want to feel important. And then I have to extend that awareness to other people. Other people also want to feel important. You know, other
sure.
people want to feel seen, you know, and want to feel heard. And especially if you feel like you're not being seen and you're not being heard, you're far more likely to get louder about it. Because you feel like, hey,
oh, absolutely.
Pay attention, right? And so, and I'm not saying
mm-hmm.
everybody else is doing that. You know, I'm not here to judge anybody else. But I just put myself in that position. And it also helps me to, I don't know, not be angry with so many people. You know, I just try
yeah.
to give them a space of I don't know what they're dealing with. I don't know what their life is like.
Right.
I don't know what led up to this. But I do see the one thing that I think specifically that is a problem is people will share, like, screenshots of like people's bad behavior, right? And again, I think there's a time and a place, but what I'm seeing often is people will share things, oh, this is from 2 years ago, and look what they said 2 years ago. Well, you know, it doesn't matter that the person has since apologized and explained they didn't know what they're talking about, or they're, you know, maybe they were quite young, you know, whatever. I mean, that's another thing. It's like sometimes I'm seeing screenshots and it's like, well, when this person said this, they were like 19 or whatever. And, you know, no offense to younger people, but don't we know that the human brain doesn't even stop developing until 25? So it's almost like anything before then, it's like, I can, you know, depending on what it is, I can, you know, forgive it or, you know, whatever, or understand it at the very least. But, you know, that gives people, there's no opportunity for people to grow. There's no opportunity for people to learn and become better people because, you did one mistake once and now you're canceled forever. And I think we'll get through it because this is new. This is relatively new. The internet is relatively new. You know, and, you know, I mean, it wasn't around when I was a kid, you know,
me neither.
It was basically just what in the 80s, it was like bulletin board systems, those old BBSs. And that was just magical to me. It's like, what? I can type and somebody across the world can type back to me. And now it's just, that's how we just live our lives. We all take it for granted. But, you know, I didn't even see a computer until, I was in fifth grade, and then I didn't know that they were, like, basically new, you know, for, like, people. I thought, oh, this is just the age when you get introduced to them, you know. But nowadays, it's like, you know, babies have them.
I know.
So it's a whole different world, you know, but we're figuring it out collectively. How do we actually respond to each other? How are we going to use these tools to better our connections? Well, we have to figure it out, and as we move through it, all those collective demons – are going to rise up. So we have some fun times ahead of us, I think. I don't think it's going to get better for a while. I think it's going to get worse. But then I do have hope that we'll figure out, like, exactly how to deal with each other, you know, in a better way. Or we'll blow ourselves up and nature will say, experiment over, try again.
And I think a lot of the problem is that people seem to really enjoy being mad. They just love it. And I think it's just, you know, I know we want to use our higher mind and our higher selves, and that's lovely. But it just, you know, over 30 years ago, I was a singer in a band. And the first night I went on stage, I got into an argument with a member of the audience. And it went so badly that I said, you know what? I'm up here to sing. I'm not up here to fight with people. And that was the last time I ever spoke from the stage. And that went on for a good 10 years in different bands that I had been in. Yeah, and I was like, I'm just not here to talk from the stage. Somebody else can do it. The guitarist can do it. Somebody else can do it. I'm just here to sing. That's my job up here, not to fight with anybody. And if anybody has an opinion about it, they can say whatever they want. That's on them. And I've just found that with social media, and obviously that was pre-social media to the extent that it is now. I mean, I didn't have a BBS until I was I was 30 when my second husband and I got one of the first in-house computers. It was like almost the size of a room. It was huge. can't even imagine. You couldn't give it away now. That's how old and clunky it was. But, I mean, I just see where people can be anonymous. They need a place to let out their anger. And I really wish there were more books about releasing anger and how to do it constructively, because I see people perpetually hurting themselves and the people around them. And it's road rage, and it's, you know, it's post-pandemic because, you know, where people were not on the road at all, now everything's going back to tons of people on the road, so people are even more hostile because they were used to being alone. Folks don't want to go back to their offices because they were allowed to to work from the comforts of their home in their jammies, and they didn't waste gas, and they didn't have to put on makeup or even underwear. I mean, it's the world went into such a huge change, and it seems like most of the people that I've spoken to about it who were working outside the home and then stayed home during the shutdown got so accustomed to being at home so quickly. It just seems to me like this is what people really want to do, and if they can do their work successfully, they should continue to be able to do that. Have you seen any of that in your practice as far as readings you've done or folks you've interacted with who come to you for advice?
Well, in terms of, not so much in terms of people who have come to me for readings, because usually the things that people are looking at when they come to me for a read, and I'm actually doing fewer readings these days anyway. I even kind of changed the language of how I describe them, because I don't want just people coming for a reading, like a tarot reading. I'm just kind of over that, because mostly people want to know when their boyfriend is going to leave their wife. And, you know, or they want to know if they're actually getting that promotion, and, you know, this, that, and the other, or you know, how is this court case, you know, going to go for them? Mm-hmm. And I get it. Those are the questions. Those are practical questions that people want. It just doesn't fulfill my soul, you know? And so most of the stuff that I'm trying to do now is help people with achieving their magical goals, you know? So I do more magical consultations, and I might pull a couple cards, but it's now I don't do like a reading, because I do readings, I just attract people who want fortune telling, which is okay. I don't want to get down on fortune telling.
Yeah.
But I did it for so many years, and it just doesn't fill my soul. But I'm not necessarily seeing that in that context, but I'm definitely seeing it online. You know, I'm definitely seeing it when I open up my Twitter feed and I see, you know, just the anger and the vitriol. And I do feel like people need to work it out. And you know, as you were talking, I was thinking, yeah, maybe there does need to be a book on dealing with anger, you know, in a witchy way, you know, because I think that we need to have a lot of different, you know, materials out there on how to constructively deal with anger. One of the things that I will talk to with my students about this issue is the importance of engaging our creativity at those times, you know, because it's so much power, you know. Anger is just, I mean, any emotion, it's just energy moving through your psyche, right? And so, and anger is really, it's the response, emotional response that we have when one or more of our boundaries have been transgressed. But one of the things that's so tricky about that is we might not consciously know which boundaries have been transgressed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just know what we feel. And a lot of times, I mean, for me, I'm a Gemini moon. And so one of my things is I have to talk it out. I have to write it out. That's how I'm able to process and organize my emotions. It was funny, an astrologer told me once, oh, you have a Gemini moon, so you intellectualize your emotions. And I have Mercury in Pisces, so I emotionalize my intellect. And so, but I feel like it's given me a good space to kind of look at it, you know, from a larger perspective. And what I have come to is doing some type of art in those times is really helpful. Whether that's writing is definitely art, you know, or even if it's just like, it could be finger paints. You know, I mean, literally you could go Jackson Pollock on this and just, you know, get a big canvas and big fistfuls of paint and scream at the canvas and throw that paint and smear it all over, you know, whatever it takes. You know, to get that out, you know, to process that energy out, not because anger is bad, but because unexamined anger is bad. You know, we need to do something, hopefully constructive with it. But the easiest thing that we often do is we rage tweet, you know, we might cut people off in traffic, you know, we let it bottle up, we bottle up because polite society says, don't be angry, you know, don't share your anger with people. But then there's the flip side too. Then we get into the gender thing, right? With men, socially, anger is way more accepted. You know, if you're a woman and you're angry, then, oh, my God, smile more, Hillary. You know, whatever. But,
I know.
You know, if you're a dude, then it's like, oh, that's a sign of power. Right, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. We would be so lucky. But, it's crazy to me. But we need to do something constructive with it. But a lot of times we don't know what that is. Like, well, what do you mean do something constructive with it? Well, you can do art. Well, I'm not an artist. I'm here to say, yes, you are. Everyone is an artist.
Wow.
Everyone is an artist. Everyone. Even if you're just drawing stick people. Guess what? That's art. You know, that's on par with the cave paintings, you know, whatever. And they were artists. I mean, that's endured. You know, you want to talk about,
oh my gosh,
if you're judging art by how many people or whatever have appreciated your work, those cave drawings have everybody. You know, that's the oldest of the old. You know, but do something. It doesn't even have to be, oh, look at this end result, because it's not even about the end result. You can burn the end result. That's fine. You don't have to look at it ever again. But just do something to allow the emotions within you to be processed, to move through you, instead of just keeping it, bottling it up, because that's when it can leak out in these inappropriate ways. And then, you know, whatever, it might feel good in the short term to yell at Susie QAnon on the internet, you know, but,
Susie
you know,
QAnon,
is
I like
it
that.
Really, and maybe it would be good. I'm not going to say it's never bad to do that, but is it, you know, is that really what's going to bring healing, you know, to the situation? And I think that that's, ultimately, that's what I look at. Like, what can we do? What can I do to bring healing to this situation?
Yeah.
I don't always succeed. You know, sometimes I'm a human being. Sometimes I'm just pissed off, and I might say something snarky.
I get it.
You know, and I also, I like to try to be funny. I like to try to be funny. And so sometimes I'll say little one-liners, and that's why I like Twitter better than Facebook, because it just it seems like you just fire off a one-liner, whatever. And I will always default to funny. And because that just gives me a chuckle. For me, that elevates me. I do have a kind of that snarky sense of humor. But it's tough because people don't necessarily get it. They don't understand sarcasm, you know, on the internet necessarily.
I know.
Or at all. Some people just don't get it at all. But
But I love the fact that you said, because – especially for my age, because I'm an older person, and being female, always taught that, you know, anger is a negative emotion and you should do everything in your power to get rid of it. Not use it, get rid of it. And I think the fact that you're saying, I think it is too, because if you tell people to get rid of it and don't express it in some creative way, it does build up and it does explode like a powder keg. But I think what you're saying as far as doing, you know, art, not only do I think doing the art is a great way to express the anger, whatever it is, but I think if you start to examine the moment that you start to feel better, if you can figure out what it is you are doing at the moment that is making you feel better, it might help with additional engagements of that emotion.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, any awareness that we would have as to how our own inner processes work is valuable. And, and really that's, to me, that's the core of all the spiritual work that we do. It's about, you know, being introspective, examining our life, you know, and figuring out how, you know, what things trigger me, you know, and, you know, triggers are real, you know, those are important, but also my triggers are no one else's responsibility. You know, I have certain things that trigger me.
Thank you. Thank you for saying
but, you know,
that.
And
thank you for saying that.
I think
I'm
it's
serious.
So important.
I hear
because,
this all the time. I love
the whole thing.
Love
I mean,
that you said, I have to stop you for a minute because this is something I struggle with. And I thank you so much for saying this. the things that trigger me, I do not lay at the feet of other people. And I think there is propensity for folks to want everyone else to know not to do certain things. And I don't think that's possible at large.
Yeah, I mean, it's very contextual, right? Because, like, in my family unit, you know, my family would know, oh, maybe we're not going to talk about A and B in front of Storm because we know that that upsets him.
Mm-hmm.
For example, right now, this is political, but I am not talking about the vaccination with my mother.
Right.
Because she has not been vaccinated. She doesn't want to be vaccinated. She's done her quote-unquote research, which is, like, bogus, obviously, but, you know, whatever. And we got in a fight about it. And, you know, I don't need to bring it up. She's turning 71, you know, on Monday.
Yep.
And she's a grown-ass woman. And I obviously have a way different idea. I've come to a very different conclusion. But I'm not going to talk about that around her because I know it's a trigger for her. And but if we were just online, if she was online, she's not. But if she was online, she would have to put up with that. Because people are talking about vaccination all the time. And so it would be her responsibility to make sure that, you know, she either doesn't put herself in that situation or that she knows that she can deal with it like an adult. And not everybody does that online. I see a lot of people saying, hey, these are my weaknesses, and I expect you, you know, to honor that and to, you know, never let me see anything that might trigger me. And I'm like, I'm not here to hold anybody's hand. I also, so for here's a real world example. We teach the class Black Rose Witchcraft. And it's an amalgamation of different forms of witchcraft, a lot of it based on different traditions that we've been trained and initiated into in our own personal experience and all that. But some of it could be considered triggering to some people, you know, certain rituals and I had some trances that are based on traditional witchcraft rituals, you know, in which, you know, maybe the candidate is being, you know, their hands bound behind their back, maybe blindfolded, you know, stripped naked in front of the bonfire, you know, drawing imagery, you know, from some of these established sources. And I did have somebody early on that was just like, oh, well, this triggered me and you should give a trigger warning. And this isn't a talk against trigger warnings necessarily, because I think they have their place. I think that if you want to do them, if you want to put trigger warnings, I think that's a kindness. I just don't think it's always required. And in this situation, it was the trance was specifically about challenging the person, you know, kind of bringing it. It wasn't supposed to be stress-free. It was supposed to be stressful in a way. I mean, being bound behind your back and blindfolded, I mean, to a very small percentage of the population, that would be considered stress-free. But I think for most of the populace, it'd be like, oh, this is kind of stressful, you know, whatever. But it's designed that way because it brings things up from the shadow. And I feel that witchcraft is primarily a form of shadow work, you know, personally and transpersonally. You know, because we bring up the shadow of the collective, right? And so we stand against the mainstream, you know, to some degree. A couple of people were really offended because they felt like they needed a trigger warning, you know, for this. And, you know, we talked about it amongst us ourselves and decided, well, no, we're not going to actually put a trigger warning because I feel that that actually invalidates the psychological process at play. Which is, hey, sometimes things are going to happen in the world that, like, trigger you, and how are you going to respond? Because you are responsible for your own response, you know, to that. And this is not necessarily talking about people who are dealing with actual trauma. And I get it. You know, if you have actual trauma, you can't always control, you know, your emotional response. But it's still your responsibility to try, or at the very least to seek out professional help, you know, to assist you. Yeah. It's not everyone else's place to say, oh, okay, I'm going to, you know, make everything safe for you. The world is not a safe space. And we can make safe spaces and have special spaces for that, but that's not the world. You know, the world is not a safe space. It reminds me, I love The Onion, and years ago there was an article from The Onion that was all about making the world child safe, and one of their things was they were going to fill up the Grand Canyon with those plastic puffballs, you know, they have like in those ball bins where the kids like, you know, and it's like, oh, we're going to make this the Grand Canyon safe for kids. And I thought, this is such a metaphor for just how society was going. And that was back then. This is the 90s probably when that came out, you know, with The Onion and early 2000s. And I'm like, wow, it's just gotten worse since then. You know, we have the internet, which is just like, oh, no, when you have to make it safe for everybody. No, I'm not a fan of making everything child safe.
I'm not either.
I'm not a fan of making everything safe. I just think that we have to be adults. And again, I also have compassion, you know, for people that are dealing with actual trauma, right? But that still doesn't mean that the rest of us are going to, you know, curtail our lives or our speech, our opinions, you know, because somebody might be offended. I think that that's really kind of – that really dumbs us all down, right? Now, people
I agree, and I want to say, we're not talking about hate speech. We're talking about just experiences and life world things that happen to each of us. You know, I like saying – this is the thing I love saying. It's like, you know, when you're not of legal age, you can't have booze. When you're not of legal age, you can't drive. When you're not of legal age, everything is not for everybody. My show, I give a disclaimer at the beginning because not everything is for everybody, nor should it be. I am not here to make everybody happy. I'm here to have actual conversations with people who have been through actual shit and write about it and are magical practitioners to whatever extent that they are, or writers to whatever magical extent they are. But I give a warning at the beginning of every show. I'm foul-mouthed, and I will talk about every fucking thing I want to. There's your warning.
There you go.
You can either take a chance with me or not. That's it. But see, but that to me is my responsibility as far as being a public person who does a public thing. I have a talk show. You know, if you want something where they don't curse and you want something where they don't talk about sex and everything is all sanitized, that ain't here. Go find that. You know what I'm saying? I give you a chance in the beginning of every show to say, maybe she's going to say something that's going to upset me. You fucking A right. I might and probably will. But if you've been listening, I mean, the show's been on the air for almost 10 years. If you've been listening more than a week, thank you so much. Next February will be officially 10 years. I mean, I've been doing this a long fucking time. Okay? So, yeah, I talk to people about real shit. Here's one of the things that gets me. And I don't need sympathy. It happened a long, long fucking time ago. I was sexually assaulted more than one occasion, different people, whatever, whatever. When I was being initiated, part of my initiation was being bound. Okay? Mm-hmm. But I trusted who I was with. And it was a different situation, and it was a safe space. But that's me. I don't want people feeling like they have to be on eggshells around me for shit, especially shit you know nothing about. Nor is it your job to remember what my shit is about. You know what I'm saying? It's like I will do my best when somebody gives me a clear direction of I don't want to talk about this subject, that I don't want my responsibility. You made that shit abundantly clear, and that
was the person taking their responsibility by saying to you, "Hey, this is where my boundary is," and this is my point is that I can't know what everybody's boundary is unless that's been articulated to me. And so, if I'm just I'm posting something on the internet or whatever, and somebody is offended by it, well, mm-hmm. you can be offended. That's, you know, that's fine. I don't know what good that does necessarily, mm-hmm. but you know, it's different than if we're having a conversation and I know you and you've said, hey, this is my boundary, you know, or I know what your background is, you know, that's a totally mm-hmm. different thing. I'm not going to, you know, try to traipse over your boundaries. If I know that you have certain boundaries, I'm going to honor those boundaries. But I do feel that at least in some cases on the internet, what we have are people mm-hmm. just expecting that you're somehow going to magically yeah. know what all of their particular boundaries yeah. are, even though you may have never interacted with them. They've never told you mm-hmm. what their boundaries are. And right. yet I'm somehow expected, right. you know, to deal with this.
Yeah.
And, you yeah. know, and I get it. People come from a trauma, you know, they've had trauma. There's real trauma in the world. I also was sexually abused. And, you know, I get that there's trauma, you know. And mine, you know, there's actually a couple instances, but the one that was actually mm-hmm. the most difficult was actually in a witchcraft context. It was an elder priest,
wow.
you know, in the fairy tradition.
Wow.
And they were not my teacher, but they were mm-hmm. a well-known priest, and they've since passed away. But they yeah. Really abused their power. And that messed me up for many yeah. years, you know, because mm-hmm. I, you know, oh, did I allow this to happen? Or where could I have
sure.
been, you know, better? And I, you know, it was just like, it was this weird thing. And it did, it messed me up, you know, for a long time. But I'm not expecting other
yeah.
people to cater to that, you know. Now, the people around
yeah.
me that know the details know that it's probably not a good idea to bring this person's name up unless we want to have a conversation, you know, about the nitty-gritty
sure.
of, you know, what's going on.
Sure.
So, you know, but sometimes I will have to talk about this person because, again, they were an elder priest and they trained many people. In fact, I have somebody who's coming to me now, you know, for possible training, and they trained partially with this person, you know, back in the day, back in the
wow.
80s. And
yeah.
and so I will have to talk about all this stuff again, you know, and it is somewhat triggering, but at the same time, I also know that that's my work. I have to confront it and I have to
yeah.
do my own stuff through it, but I'm not
yeah.
going to expect anybody else to do that work for me. You know, everybody has
right.
different experiences, but I think that we all need to grow up. We all need to take responsibility for our own triggers. And if we have legit trauma, it might be incumbent upon us to seek out actual therapy, you know, instead of
sure.
just the magic circle, you know, because
absolutely.
They are not the same. You know, magic and witchcraft certainly have what could be considered a therapeutic element, and it can be
sure.
helpful. And I think in the big Venn diagram of things, there's definitely a crossover. But sometimes you need therapy, you know. I've been to therapy.
Absolutely.
I there's no shame in it. I think it's awesome.
Not at all.
Not everybody can afford
yep.
it, you know, and that's,
yeah.
you know, really unfortunate, you know. So I also don't want to shame people if they can't get therapy. But there's also a lot of other alternatives now. There are cheaper alternatives.
Yeah.
There are therapists that you can connect with over Zoom and Skype.
Yep. Yep.
You know, like one of my friends, you know, is a online therapist. And, you know, it really
wow.
can make it more accessible to people. And so I really do want to stress that, like, hey, you there are alternatives, you know, or at least look into it. You know, therapy is not a bad
sure.
thing. I'd like to try
not
to help
all.
To ease, you know, some of that stigma against mental illness. Because, and you see it a lot now, like, especially on Twitter, you see people put that in their bios, like, oh, neurodivergent, and, you know, I suffer from this and I suffer from that. And on one level, I think that's
yeah.
really good because it's getting it out there that, like, hey, there's a lot more people than you think who suffer, you know, from
sure.
mental illness.
Sure.
I also see people hiding behind that and just using that as an excuse for bad behavior. And I think that's so sad
true.
Because that really just hurts people with mental illness because that's actually perpetuating that negative stereotype. They're like, oh, people with mental illness, you know, can't, you know,
yeah.
be responsible for themselves and they can't do that. And that's so terrible, you know, because, you know, there's, I think probably most people deal with some form of mental illness, at least at some point in their life,
absolutely.
You know, and,
absolutely.
You know, there's
and
no shame
so
in
true.
That.
not at all. I agree with you. Absolutely. Yeah,
and I think that we need, but we're still figuring out collectively on the internet, how do we interact, you know, with it? Because if you think America is diverse, you know, at least pockets of America is diverse, then you get on the internet and it's like ultimate diversity. Because it's like as many people as you can get in a room, right, of all these different types. And now we have to figure out, how do we actually deal with people who are so unlike ourselves? And then the flip side, how do I deal with people that are exactly the same as me? Because that's think you'd get along, but usually it's the ones that are actually just mirroring you. And those are the ones you're going to have the worst time with. Why? Because we have a bad time dealing with our own shadow. We're back to shadow work now.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's true. It's absolutely true. And I, you know, but one of the things you said earlier, I just want to address really quickly. And it's about, you know, I find that people who want to control speech for other people because of the effect it may or may not have on them, again, this is not something we were told in advance, but the folks that swoop in and want to say, you know, you said this and it made me feel this way, and it's like, that was never your intention in the first place. I feel that if we start controlling each other through that and using that as a mechanism, then we're not really friends with our friends. We're friends with a version of people that we want them to be as opposed to who they actually are. I hope I'm explaining that right. I would rather deal with the world as I find it as opposed to the world that I necessarily think I want it to be. It's like I can't learn anything if I'm constantly talking to myself and dumbing down my emotions, or you're dumbing down your emotions because you know I've been through a thing and you're afraid to talk about it. No. Because I've survived it and because I've gone through it, I might be able to actually help somebody else get through a similar situation. I was also raised in a very abusive home. So for me, it's more about, let me help somebody else who's been through this shit and maybe didn't have somebody to talk to because I didn't, you know, because I was told, you don't talk about this. This is in the home only. They're going to take you away and put you in a boarding school. I mean, I heard every line of bullshit as a child that you could possibly have thrown at a youngster as a way to keep them from reporting the abuse that was happening in the home. And I, you know, so for me, while I may go back to a moment in time when you describe something that's happened to you, I'm here to be supportive in that arena, not to freak out and tell you that I can't help you because I've been through it. I want to help you because I've been through it. So I'm hoping that the things that trigger some of us, we can actually use to help others, you know, and maybe try not to internalize so many painful things. Listen, I've been through trauma. I've watched people being shot and strangled in front of me, people I've loved. I have seen, I've seen weird shit, okay? It's just, it's been an interesting life. I've seen some weird shit. And now my mother, who was originally pagan, is now Pentecostal and renouncing the goddess. And, oh, please, don't even. It's so much with my family. They're just, they're insane. My whole family is nuts. My dad was nuts. My mother's still nuts. Half my family's insane or dead. The dead part probably better off at this point. But, I mean, it's just unbelievable what you think other people haven't been through that you've experienced. You'd be surprised at how much shit you've gone through. 30 of your friends have been through and more.
Yeah, or worse. You know, that's the thing is we don't necessarily know unless we've sat down with somebody and really had all the nitty-gritty just laid out on the table. And even then, you don't necessarily know, you know, somebody in their entirety. But I always just kind of bring myself back to that space of like, well, I can't know what they're dealing with. So even when I've been the recipient, when I've been the target of bullying, you know, and, you know, I was, you know, as a kid, I was bullied on the playground. And then as an adult, I was bullied on the internet, you know, and so that's happened a few times over the years. And I'd like to think I'm better at dealing with it now. When it first happened, I was devastated. And it was like, it was like the most difficult thing I ever went through emotionally. But now what I try to do is, even if somebody is like coming for me, I try to remind myself that I don't know this person. I don't know what they're dealing with. I don't know what may have triggered them. I don't know what they think they believe. Because I've been told things about myself from people that said, well, I saw you do this. Well, that never happened. I saw you do
this.
But it never happened. Yeah. I never actually did that. So I don't know where some people are coming. I could just write them off and say they're crazy. But, you know, maybe not. There's been times in my life where I thought I knew something, you know, whatever. And then it was like, oh, my God, I'm wrong. Right? And there, I can't remember her name, but there was a really great TED Talk about, you know, what is it like to be wrong? And she asked people, what does it feel like to be wrong? And everybody's like, oh, it feels bad and, you know, blah, blah, blah. She's like, nope. She's like, that you're describing what it feels like to know that you're wrong, but you were still wrong even when you thought you were right. So feeling wrong feels like feeling right. And that was such an eye-opener for me, you know, because it's like, if you think you know something, you don't necessarily know it, you know. And there's been times in my life, like I said, like I thought I knew something about somebody, or yes, this is how this went down. And then I will be shown evidence that that is not true. And it's just like, whoa, I'm humbled. I'm eating that crow, right? So I always try to remind myself, like, I can't know what this person has gone through. So maybe I should just have compassion for them, you know? So even when people have come for me and attacked me and said horrible things, I try to have a space of compassion for them. Again, not as a Pollyanna. I'm not here to say, oh, light and love, you know, everybody. But I want to give myself light and love first, you know, whatever. And it's kind of like those masks come down in the airplane. You do yours first. And then you can help the kid next to you, you know. And that's an analogy I come back to time and time again, you know. But we also, we need to help each other. Because if we're not here to help each other, then all we're going to do is hurt each other. And those are really our two choices in life.
That is amazing and so true. And wow, we are like almost at the end of the hour. That's just your.
I know. We just get going, and then we don't even talk about witchcraft. I'm just impressed that we hardly mentioned the former guy. You know, so I, you know, that we're doing better then. I think the last time we got together it was all Trump.
Yes, it was. It was PTTD, post-traumatic Trump disorder. No, we're trying to get away from it, but I do think, you know, because we're not just witches, we're fucking people. And that's why this is a talk show as opposed to an interview show, because I want to know more about you and what you think. And I love the fact that we've had this conversation, and I hope it's helped somebody. I know it's helped me. But, yeah, so write that book, because I think you're the
one that brought
it up.
There you go. That's not a bad idea.
I think you'd be perfect for it. I think it's right up your alley. I think it speaks to, well, obviously it speaks to the fact that I love you and appreciate you and respect your opinion. I think it's definitely a book that's right up your alley. And speaking of books, please, before we go, tell the folks when your books are being released, because you have not just one but two coming out, and how people can get in touch with you and your online classes and all that. Please share.
All right. So my next book is The Witch's Name, Crafting Identities of Magical Power, and that will come out in March of 2022. And it's more than just a dictionary of names. In fact, it's not really a dictionary of names. It's really about the process of coming up with a magical name as a spell that you would cast upon yourself in order to increase your magical power and potential. So I'm very excited about that. There's a lot of exercises, journal prompts, really getting into the meatiness of the process. And then my next book comes out 2 months later, and right now I just got the title for it. It's The Satyr's Kiss, Queer Men, Sex Magic, and Modern Witchcraft. I'm very excited about that. It was actually the first book I ever wanted to write. And it really is a book of a witchcraft practice specifically for queer men. But I hope that anyone can get usefulness out of it. And it has a very healthy dose of queer sex magic for individuals, for couples, and for groups. And so it is a little different than anything else that has been out there, but it's near and dear to my heart. So I'm very excited about those. That comes out in May of 2022. And, of course, they'll be available on Amazon, but I always really ask people to check in with their local small business bookseller, metaphysical bookseller if possible, or you could also eventually get them from my online store, themysticdream.com, where you can get my other books. You can get signed copies. You could also go to my website, fairywolf.com. That's F-A-E-R-Y, wolf.com. And you can find out what I'm up to, what I'm doing. And then you can also go to our modernwitchuniversity.com, in which we have a lot of different classes, including Black Rose Witchcraft, which is a year-long online course in the art of the craft. So if anyone is interested about any of those projects and more, just check out those websites. You can find me on Twitter. I'm all over Twitter, not so much on Facebook, a little bit on Instagram. But you can find me on Twitter. My DMs are open, so I'd love to chat with folks.
Awesome. Storm, thank you so much for another killer hour with me. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me back.
And just so folks know, you're already booked for episodes for your books that are coming out. So look for Storm a bit more on the show. So we're very excited. Thank you so much, Storm. It was great to speak with you. Have a wonderful, blessed weekend, and I'll talk to you soon.
Right on. My pleasure. You as well. Take care.
All right, my love. Bye-bye. All right, everybody, I will be back next week. Jason Mankey is going to be on Saturday, and my Friday show, I can't remember who's coming on. They're going to shoot me. I guess I better look it up quickly before I get off the air. That might be a good idea. Let me see. Looking. Rain is a moron today. So sorry. But I do have somebody coming up on Friday. Yes, as a matter of fact, guess who it's going to be? It is going to be the amazing Azure West. She's going to talk about the documentary she's about to release. That's Friday night. And again on Saturday, Jason Mankey, and we're going to talk about the Horned God of the Witches. So everybody have a wonderful week. I will talk to you soon. Blessings.